All right.
Okay.
We've been talking about the gospel, the word gospel.
Yeah, we've had two recent videos about a word study on gospel words in Greek and Hebrew, and then a video on how to read the fourfold gospel.
Yeah, and when you say we have them, we don't have them out yet in real time.
Oh, I suppose. That's right.
Or actually, will we? I don't know. Let's start over.
Whenever. Okay. Okay.
So on the podcast, we've been talking about the Gospels, as in the ancient biographies of Jesus.
Yep.
And then the word gospel in general.
Correct.
What it means.
That's right.
And today, we want to talk about a cousin word that is translated witness.
Yes.
And so that's what we're going to do in this episode of the podcast.
Yes. And we have someone new to the podcast conversations and a recent addition to our team?
Yeah, I'm coming up on a year, actually.
Wow, already? That's not so recent.
I know. There you go. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's right. So you're hearing the voice of Carissa Quinn.
Hi.
Who, yes, has been on the Bible Project team. And we've known each other for some years now.
Yeah.
You're also, you know, the honorable title is a Bible scholar. I'd like to say Bible nerd.
I think that is the more honorable title.
Bible scholar?
No, I like Bible nerd.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
I
all
do.
Right, wonderful.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe first share a little bit about yourself. And the reason being is that you researched the word witness.
Right.
And wrote this script.
Yep.
That then we worked on together, and your voice will be reading the video. And that's a new step for the Bauer Project.
Yeah.
We're excited to have more than one scholar and writer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe share a bit about yourself.
Sure. So my background is biblical studies and education. And here at the Bible Project, I get to do both. So I love that so much. So here I work on classroom stuff and blogs and writing articles. And then this is my first video script. So working on this script for the word witness. That's what we're talking about today.
Yes. And I guess to be a card-carrying Bible nerd, it requires some season of going to school for way too long.
Yeah, that's true. In school for about 25 years of my life and had an identity crisis after that. Huh. Yeah, I finished my PhD at Golden Gate Seminary in San Francisco in the Hebrew Bible, and my work was mostly in the Psalms, so the story that the whole book of Psalms tells.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's great.
And at the Bible Project, you are working on a number of things. One is the classroom initiative, classroom.bible, and then also helping us think through how do we get people deeper into learning the Bible other than just watching the videos and script writing.
Yep.
Starting to script write.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Super exciting.
Yeah.
So you did the deep dive on the Greek and Hebrew words for witness.
Right.
Talk to us about the word
perfect.
Witness.
I think that there are two basic ways to think about this word, and one is just to understand the basic meaning of this word, what it means, what it doesn't, how it's used in the biblical text. Mm-hmm. And the other way is to think about how it's used in the story of Scripture. So every word occurs in a context, and this one occurs in the story of the Hebrew Bible. So this is something I love about the word studies here, is that you guys look at a word and what it contributes to the overarching story, or if it contributes. Mm-hmm. And this word definitely does. So
yeah, that's right. The word study videos are kind of, they're not technically just reading little condensed dictionary entry videos.
Mm. Right.
They really become stories about the whole Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this video does that.
Yeah, this cool video does that.
Yeah, that's right.
Can we step back, actually?
Yeah.
Do you remember why we decided on this word?
Yes.
Witness?
Yes.
Our friend Kevin Palau came in the office and was like, guys, would it be great if you had videos on the gospel or on evangelism?
On evangelism. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was talking about how the words evangelize and witness mean a lot of things in a lot of different Christian traditions.
Yeah.
And so he was like, yeah, it'd be cool to have some videos that bring clarity to that.
Yeah.
And for some reason, that stuck with us. And we were like, yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that the conversation was like 2 years ago. Yeah. I'm finally getting to it. For me, witness was a word in, I grew up in the church, so that was a common word.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Witnessing. It was a verb, mostly.
Oh. Mm. You witness.
Yeah, you witness. Or
go witnessing.
Yeah. Oh, I guess go witnessing. I guess
go
I didn't really say that. You know, we often just said share the gospel.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I see.
But Whenever the word witness did come up, it was in terms of that, share the gospel.
Yeah.
It was always about...
like street evangelism?
Usually,
kind of
yeah. Well, strangers? Often. I mean, I've told the story with you a number of times of we had this ministry where we would actually go, if people left their address on like a comment card at church, we had a team that would go to their house and knock on their door and invite ourselves in and then witness. And we would go through the Romans Road.
Yeah,
and
so you were prepared with what you were going to say.
Totally, yeah. And I did it a couple times. I was in youth group. And so if a kid came and left a comment card. Mm. So I went to like kids' houses and it was really awkward. It was extremely awkward.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've told before in a talk a story, but I won't tell now. But yeah, for me, witness is all about that. It's
so
about
that.
It's one-on-one convincing someone to understand the gospel. And for me at that time, the gospel was just what you need to know and believe to go to heaven when you die.
Right.
And I think a lot of people are there
with
what they think of the word witness.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's really interesting to do a word study on this word, because we get to ask that question. Is this what the word witness means in the Bible, or does it mean something else? And it does have similar meanings, but isn't exactly that. So
cool.
Yeah, that's why it's interesting. I think so we've also talked about how in a more non-religious environment, the word witness typically means just to testify in a courtroom or to see something happen and then be able to give an account of that thing.
Yeah. Yep.
Some people brought up.
Like it's either a religious word or kind of a courtroom.
Yeah. Yeah. Word. Judicial word.
I don't use judicial it in any other context.
Did you witness that? Yeah, you wouldn't say that.
Oh,
did you see that?
No. Oh, but, maybe. Did you witness? But if you saw a car accident?
Yeah.
I'm a witness.
I saw that.
But you witness car.
And that's a little more legal.
It is a little bit more legal.
Legal, but outside of a courtroom.
Yeah.
But it's so that you'd be like, if this goes to court, I was a witness.
I was a witness.
Right. Yeah. So it's not really a common term outside of the legal setting or the religious setting.
Correct.
Yeah.
Can I get a witness?
Can I get a witness?
Why do I don't know why I know that.
I was thinking about that song all morning.
It's a gospel thing, right?
It is, Okay. But I don't know what it means.
Gospel.
Gospel as in the genre of music.
Gospel
and,
music, yeah. Okay.
Can I get a witness?
Yeah.
I don't know what song or what, but.
Yeah. By the end of this podcast, maybe we'll understand what that means.
Yeah, that's right. Deal.
The word witness isn't super common in everyday language for us, but it does occur a lot throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament, over 200 times in each.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's
a lot.
Yeah, it's a pretty common word.
Yeah, that's over 400 times throughout the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament.
Yeah, and it occurs in a lot of different forms in Hebrew.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
There's a noun and a verb form, aid and oud.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Greek, there's a noun and a verb. So there's martus and there's martyreo. So it's to a witness and then to bear witness or even to witness something.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. So even, right there. So you have, if I witness something, that works in English. If I witness it, it's referring to my perception.
Yep.
I saw something. And then
if I am
to use it as a verb, we have to add an extra word, bear.
To bear witness. Or sometimes the word to testify is used, even throughout our English translations. That's
testify.
That's how it's translated a lot
of
the time.
So in that case, it's a different English word rendering a related set of Greek words.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
So,
but I think that's helpful to witness something and then testify about that thing.
Yep.
So I think it's helpful to just think about the basic meaning of the word throughout scripture, because there are a couple things we learn that are related to those common conceptions you brought up, John. So just like in English, the Hebrew words for witness and bear witness, they do also occur in a legal setting a lot of the time.
Yes.
So we see that when Boaz buys land from Naomi's family or when Jeremiah buys land. These are transactions. Mm-hmm. And they call together witnesses to see what happens.
Is that story about Boaz is when the guy won't, the nearest kinsman of Naomi won't buy the land and they yank his sandal off and spit in his face?
Yeah.
Do you know that story? Mm. No, actually, I think spit in the face is from Deuteronomy, but they take off a sandal.
They take off the sandal, but I don't think all witnesses have to do that.
That's a legal thing, is to take off your sandal.
Yeah. Yeah. So in this story you're mentioning in Ruth chapter 4, there's a guy who's closer in the family line to Naomi, who's a widow, and he's named so-and-so.
Oh, yeah.
His Hebrew name is so-and-so?
Do you remember that?
Yes.
It's this awesome Hebrew phrase. I think it's polonialmoni, something, so-and-so. He's named such and such a guy.
Yeah.
He never gets a proper name. And then he doesn't want to do it because he realizes, oh, I'm going to have to take on a widow, take another mouth to feed if I redeem the land that belongs to the family. And so he says, I won't do it. And then they say, take off your sandal.
Yeah, it's like a shaming thing,
oh,
right?
Oh, it's a shaming thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, it was the custom in former times in Israel concerning the redemption and exchange of land to confirm a matter that a man had to remove his sandal and give it to another.
Yeah.
It's such a helpful little description, actually, because this
was a means of bearing witness in Israel.
To take off your sandal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, what Hebrew word is used there?
Te'udah.
Oh.
Te'udah. This was a form of bearing witness.
Yep.
So it's like a transaction. It's like a receipt.
Uh-huh.
You lose your sandal.
Oh, you actually give it over?
Yeah, he takes off his sandal.
Isn't there a reference to a desandaled person? Like that becomes a description of a person in some later writing.
In Deuteronomy, there's a law when a guy won't redeem a widow from the family line, the priests and the elders, this is what I'm thinking, will summon him to the town center. And if he persists in saying, I won't marry this woman who's, my brother was married to, his brother's widow will go up to him before all the elders, take off one of his sandals and spit in his face.
Oh.
Yeah.
Saying, this is what is done to the man who won't build up his brother's family line.
Wow.
And the man's line will be known in Israel as the family of the unsandaled
one. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. It's like a public shaming, but it's bearing witness.
Right.
Publicly saying, we're all witnessing this guy won't inconvenience himself to help out a family member.
Yeah.
Anyway. It's like a pie in the face.
It's
yeah.
A little more like...
More intense.
A
little more intense.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry to the... That's just such
No, it's a memorable example. Yes. And the point is that there are witnesses watching this.
Correct.
They see something happen and then they can recall it later.
Yeah. What was
the whole community knows.
With the word of taking up the sand, te'eo or whatever you said?
Te'edah.
That's right, te'edah, yeah.
How's that connected to the word witness?
It's one of the words for witness.
Yeah.
So the Hebrew word is aid, but it occurs in a few forms and that's one of them, te'edah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. Someone can stand and give bear witness. I saw something and this bears witness. But in this case, a guy walking without a sandal is an act of bearing witness to the thing that he didn't do.
Right. So actually the word witness can also function to mean evidence. So it's proof or evidence.
Yes. Oh.
So the guy without the sandal is walking proof that this thing happened.
That's right.
So he might not have some backup sandals at home. So for a while, he's got to wear that shame.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's right. It's the evidence shame.
Yeah.
Evidence.
Yeah, evidence.
It's a kind of witness.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah, it's another translation of that Hebrew word. Okay. So the reason that I think this is helpful to talk about is because talking about the idea of being a witness in a legal setting shows that this word, it's kind of a simple word in the sense that it's defining someone who just sees something and then they talk about it or they share about it. So it's a little bit different than what you were saying, John, about
convincing someone
convincing or pushing. It doesn't really have that kind of connotation. It's just seeing something and then talking about the thing you've seen.
You had an experience.
Yep.
And you talk about it.
Yeah. So I think that's helpful.
Yes.
It takes away that layer
it's
of
almost,
proselytizing or pushing.
It's almost shocking how unshocking it is.
Yeah, right.
I see stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And I share about it.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess that's bearing witness.
Yeah, but then the other part of that is that it's a simple word, but it's also a very weighty word. Being a truthful legal witness carries a lot of responsibility in the ancient Israelite culture. So you see that in a lot of different ways in scripture. It's one of the Ten Commandments that you should not bear false witness.
Oh, yes.
So
that's right.
That's kind of a big deal.
It is a big deal.
It's right there.
Top
yeah.
10.
Yeah. Yeah. One of 10. Yeah. And it's a serious crime in Israel. So whatever the false witness is intending to do to the other party, that's the consequence that they will bear upon themselves if they are found out.
Isn't it amazing how much even today the value of a witness to as evidence?
Yeah.
You know, like getting someone hearing from their mouth, there's so much weight to that. It's a big deal when you do that, when you say, this is what I experienced, especially when it's saying that someone did something wrong.
That's right.
Yeah.
Are you thinking primarily legal?
In the legal sense,
It's weighty.
There was some legal document that my wife and I had to sign. It was for insurance or something like this. And we had to get a notary public to witness me signing it.
Right.
So I walked a block down to like a UPS store.
Right.
Because it had advertised on the window, get your document signed here. And I had to pay this woman $10.
Mm-hmm. To watch you sign
To watch me sign a piece of paper and then she put a stamp on it.
Yeah.
It was my first time ever doing it. And now I realize it's like a normal thing.
Do you notice they have the most wonderful signatures? Have you ever like...
A notary people?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. They're so elaborate.
Sorry. So, but the point is, this is actually more woven into our lives than perhaps we realize.
Right.
It's a very simple act.
This is why the psalmist says in Psalm 27, he begs God to not abandon him. And he says, false witnesses have risen against me. I think when I read those kind of verses in the Bible, I don't hear the weightiness of it until I'm like looking at what the word witness really means. And that if false witnesses are surrounding this person, his life is actually being threatened because of it.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's interesting.
It is.
Simple but weighty.
Yeah, that's right. And also in more traditional cultures where your public honor is way more tied into your identity, a false witness is like challenging your standing in the community.
Yeah.
It could actually ruin your whole life.
Yeah.
And that's still true today. Someone cooks up a scheme at you against work, two people are trying to take you down so you don't get the promotion or something.
That stuff probably totally even more in an honor shame.
Correct.
Society.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So witnesses are one of the primary ways that people in the community would know what's true or not. So it's a weighty thing. I think it's interesting that God is referred to as a witness throughout the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament, actually. So what's the effect of saying God is my witness? That's a question I've been asking as I've been looking at this. So here's one example. In Genesis 31, when Jacob and Laban make a covenant, Laban says to Jacob, if you oppress my daughters or if you take wives besides my daughters, although no one is with us, see God as a witness between you and me. So it seems like it's both because nobody's there.
Yeah, right.
But to say God is a witness also implies some severity if you do this thing.
It's kind of upping the ante.
Yeah.
If it's you know, Joab over there is a witness. It's like, okay, well.
But... Have you ever imagined you were on the Truman Show? You know, like that someone was always watching you.
Every now and then I have that,
And
that
like, thought. If you're just kind of in a private moment and you're like, what if someone was watching this private moment?
Oh, I see.
You know, like this feels so by myself, but like, what if this was, and what would someone be thinking about my life right now if they were observing it, if they were witnessing it?
Yes. Yeah. Terrifying thought.
It is a terrifying thought.
I think that's what Laban's talking about.
Right? Yeah, I think so. I think it might be a bit
it's
of
like
a...
God's watching you.
A threat.
Says the guy who just cheated a man out of 20 years of his life.
Right.
Yeah. So people invoke God as a witness.
Right.
That's like... playing the God card.
Yeah.
He's a witness of a lot of things in the Hebrew Bible, like covenants like this or treaties that people are making between each other. But what's interesting is that in the New Testament, God, the Father, the Spirit, and Jesus are all referred to witnesses about Jesus. Yeah. So there's like a very specific content or thing that they're witnessing about.
This is a thing in the Gospel of John, especially.
Throughout John, especially. This word is used a lot in John. Yeah. So the Father bears witness to the identity of Jesus. Jesus and the Father bear witness to who Jesus is, that God sent him. The Spirit bears witness
to Jesus.
That's a weird thing that Jesus bears witness to himself. This is John 8, right?
The leaders say, too. They say, you can't testify about yourself. Yeah. And he says, well, I testify about myself and the Father testifies about me, too. So...
Yeah.
My witness is reliable.
Mm-hmm. I am a witness to myself.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is, that's true.
Yeah.
Like, same. It's your word.
It's my word.
But the question is there another witness that like, corroborate? Yeah.
In the legal context in the Hebrew Bible, two or three witnesses were always needed. Right. So that's
it's kind of the famous line.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And it occurs in multiple places. And then Jesus also says that. In John 8, 17 and 18, he says, in your law, it's written that the witness or testimony of two people is true. I'm the one who bears witness about myself, and the Father who sent me bears witness about me. Mm-hmm. So I think he's drawing on that.
This is like an inner Trinitarian. The Father, Son, and Spirit all bear witness to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I've never fully worked that out in the Gospel of John. Mm-hmm. But if I remember, it's really a prominent theme or motif.
Yeah.
It's like the whole narrative is think through the epilogue at the Gospel of John. He says, there are lots more stories about Jesus. Right. I have chosen these so that you may trust that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God. Mm. I've often wondered if the witness theme isn't a part of a strategy of persuasion. Mm-hmm. It's like the story has all these witnesses so that by the end you, the reader, have to say, wow, sheesh.
Yeah, that's interesting.
There's so much evidence in the story.
Yeah, and evidence, again, is a related word. So makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is an interesting thing. Paul says multiple times, so in Romans 1, in the greetings of his letters, he says, God is my witness. That I pray for you, or God is my witness, how I yearn for you. So it almost seems like this idea of God being a witness becomes a little bit colloquial.
Mm. Like a phrase.
Almost like I swear to God.
Yeah.
Except a little more reverent.
Yeah, don't you think that's
essentially
becomes the equivalent?
I think so.
Yeah.
Swear to God.
Except that can be used
in
a less serious way, maybe.
But even if you're using it in a less serious way, in a casual way, I think that's what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
If you really asked the person, if they said, I swear to God.
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean? Maybe they wouldn't mean that.
I wonder.
That God's their witness.
Yeah.
Maybe it does become too colloquial.
Yeah. Maybe they just mean what I'm saying. And this is what I think
means.
Yeah.
I think they just mean trust me.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying is true. It's reliable.
That's right. Yeah.
But what Paul is saying is because
God
is my witness.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. I'm just looking at these three examples. Romans.
Yeah.
Philippians, Thessalonians. These were all groups of people that he says in other places he wants to go see them, but for one reason or another he hasn't. And I know in other cases, like in Corinth, the fact that he didn't go travel and see a church, people started to wonder if he was reliable.
Yeah, interesting.
And so I wonder if that became, he traveled so much, it became a thing where he kind of needed to be like, listen, God's my witness. I yearn for you with the affection of Christ, he tells the Philippians. Even though I can't come see you right now, I'm in prison, but God's my witness.
Yeah, trust me.
Yeah, trust me.
Yeah.
A lot of people wanted him to come hang out,
you're
saying, and he couldn't get to everyone.
Or he said that he was going to come, but then he wasn't able to.
And he wasn't able to.
Yeah, and then people started to wonder if he was reliable.
Can you be trusted?
You know, we all have friends like that.
I'm usually that guy a lot.
Maybe you can pick up this phrase, God is my witness.
God is my witness. I meant to, and then I fell asleep. Went to bed early.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, so that's interesting. God can be a witness. Yeah. A person can be a witness of something they see. And then another use of witness is that an object can be a witness. So an object can be personified, whether an altar or a pile of stones.
What?
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
I know. Even listen to this verse. This sounds kind of weird. So it says in Joshua 24, when Joshua and the people renew the covenant, Joshua says, "Behold, this stone shall be a witness against us, for it has heard all the words of Yahweh that he spoke to us." So
is this a figure of speech? Like, what's he doing there?
No, this isn't crazy. This is, I think what happens when you sign a document.
Does he think the stone heard what he said?
Oh, I see. I
think it's just personified.
I think God heard what they said.
Yeah.
The stone is a symbol of that.
That's interesting. I need to think about this more.
I think it's
that's what
least...
he says. He says the stone's a witness. It heard everything we said.
Well, yeah. And what they did is they just read out the covenant terms of the Torah.
Right.
And they all said, we're going to follow the covenant of the Torah.
Yeah.
And he marks the moment with this pillar.
That was there while it was read.
Yeah.
This stone, every time we come here.
We were here. The stone was here.
We all said it.
We said it.
Yeah.
And this stone will be remembered.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's a reminder.
Yeah, reminder.
So whenever the people see it, they remember all the things that were read. So it's a memorial or a reminder. But then it's also evidence. It's so that when people see it, they're like, oh, yeah, this thing really did happen.
Yep. It's similar to the way that our signatures function on a document where you have to get maybe a co-witness or co-signer or something like that, don't you think? And then the piece of paper is like a witness.
Yeah, though I kind of like the idea of having an object that reminds you of something or is a witness of something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That is a cool thing.
Yeah.
Don't you think, like, I don't have any of my diplomas up on my wall.
No, neither.
But you know when you go into a doctor's office and they're up? In a way, it's a witness.
You're right. It's testifying to something that happened.
But it would be weird if they said, this diploma was there when I...
It heard all my...
It saw me graduate.
That's just a weird turn of phrase.
It is a weird turn of phrase, but that is what it means.
It's kind of what it means.
It's like there's witness that I'm qualified to give you the whatever medical advice I'm giving you.
Yeah, and then somewhat related to this idea is in the New Testament, the works of a person. So this
is back to the Gospel of John.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Back to John. The works of a person can testify or bear witness to that person or who they are. So they function as evidence. So again, it's kind of an object. It's an action, a thing, not a person.
Yeah.
So the works of Jesus testify about him, his identity.
Seems like witness is a thing that humans do.
Yeah.
But if something else is doing that, we can anthropomorphize it in a way and say it's being a witness.
I see.
Yeah.
The works bear witness. The pillar hears and is a witness.
It is a testimony about something or...
I think we would typically say it's evidence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But to say it's a witness anthropomorphizes
it. I see, yeah.
And like just drills it home even more.
Yeah.
Which I think is cool. It's a cool image.
Yeah, it is cool. Okay. So that's the outline of the basic meaning.
That's the basic meaning. Yes. It's a simple word that means to see something, share what you've seen. It can refer to a person in a legal setting, an object.
God.
God can be a witness.
Yep.
So here's the fascinating part, though, and why I like the word studies we do, because this word does tell the story of the whole Bible, especially the people of God in the Bible. Mm-hmm. So it gives us insight into that.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I've noticed, and we talked about this in the script writing, is that for these word studies, you typically look for whether there's a basic pattern for how this word functions in the story.
If it functions in a design pattern or repeated.
Yeah. So this word does have a basic pattern that it follows. So the word witness tells the story that God wants a group of witnesses, so people who see him, who experience him, and then his desire is that these people would represent him or bear witness to him, to who he is. And he typically raises up a chief witness to help them do this. So you see this theme, even though the word isn't used yet, you see this theme in Genesis 1 and 2 when he wants people to partner with him for the flourishing of the whole world. So he has, specific individuals who will Mm-hmm. Oh, all humanity, I suppose, mm-hmm. in Genesis 1 and 2. But then especially in Genesis 12, he chooses one group, Abraham's family, out of the many, so that the many would be blessed. Mm.
You know, sorry to go back.
Yep.
It's an interesting way to think about the image of God in Adam and Eve as the word witness isn't used, but image, which is a representation.
Right.
Image is a statue.
Yeah, I think the theme is there for sure.
Yeah, in a way, one of the most basic things a witness is you represent the person or thing or event that you saw.
Yeah.
So in a way, humans are like a living witness to the creator whom they represent. That's the logic, I think, of the witness.
Hmm.
So in that sense, humans are,
Say that again. Humans are a representation of the creator.
If you put the witness in a bigger, more basic, abstract category of just representation.
Yep.
I saw a car accident.
Yeah.
Now the car accident's passed. You can't go there. But I can represent to you what happened because I was there. In a way, the image of God is a embodied representation of the creator. That's what it means.
Yep. Yeah.
And so, in a way, humans are these embodied witnesses to the invisible creator. Yeah.
And so is all creation, then, in a way, too.
And all creation bears witness to God.
Paul's kind of getting at in Romans 1.
Yep, that's right. Yeah.
For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he'll use legal language. Therefore, people are without excuse who suppress that knowledge.
Yeah, because there's been a clear testimony or clear witness.
Yeah. That's right. So your point is the word witness isn't used in the Eden narrative.
That develops later.
But the concept of a group of people who represent God out to creation, that's like the foundation.
Yeah, it's right there. That partnership is the foundation of the whole story. Mm-hmm. And then humanity fails over and over. That's part of the pattern. Wrong.
It's interesting. I don't think of a witness as a representative. That's a new idea for me.
So when I think of the verb that we usually translate as to bear witness, to me, I think I would say to bear witness or to represent that person.
Well, what's interesting is when you talk about being a representative, it feels like you have skin in the game. You are like an ambassador of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're just a witness, it feels a little bit more neutral. Like, hey, here's what I experienced.
I see.
I'm not going to give any judgments. Just here's my experience.
That's right. But it is you're representing your experience.
I'm representing my experience.
Representing.
representing it.
Yeah, maybe it's the word represent that in English sounds.
But let's take it to this idea of being made in God's image then. I'm representing that God made me and wants to partner with me and design me in a certain way.
But you also, a human, is a representation of God to creation and to other people and to the animals. I think that's the logic of the image of Genesis 1.
I'm a witness of God's creativity and his and his nature.
Yeah.
Yeah, and human. Witness means both to see and experience God.
Right.
So like the idea of being in his presence in the garden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then that experience is carried forward through people.
Yeah, as Adam and Eve spread the Garden of Eden and cultivate new land, whatever, the vision of the expanding Eden, that's being his representatives, his images, and in a way, witnesses. Though the word isn't used. Yeah. I'm not trying to press it too far.
Sure.
I'm just saying it's an interesting way to think about it.
Yeah, so the word isn't used there, and it's not used yet with the idea of Abraham's family being a blessing to all nations, but that theme is there. But it's in the story of Moses and the Torah, or the law, that the idea of being a witness to the nations or testifying to who God is becomes a little bit more clear. So in the story of the Exodus, when God rescues the people from slavery, he says to Moses to tell the people, this is Exodus 19:4-6, you yourselves have seen or witnessed what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now then, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine. So at this point, if you're like me, you're going, wait, so he chose one nation for like this special privilege or salvation or what? But then the next verse clarifies why he chose this nation.
Yeah.
and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Mm-hmm. So here we see God chooses Israel for this role of being a servant to the rest of, well, this
the logic
point,
is you saw what just happened.
You saw something.
Now
you're a kingdom of priests. Mm-hmm. And the idea of a priest is that this is a person who mediates between two parties.
Yeah.
And the only parties in the story so far are Yahweh and the nations.
Yes.
So you're saying one way to summarize Hebrew scriptures is that God selected a people who could experience him and witness him and who he is, and then bear witness to the rest of creation or rest of the nation.
Right. Mm-hmm. So they're chosen for a specific role, but the purpose is that all nations would know who God is because of this, the witness of this one group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is a good example of where the word witness isn't used, but the theme
being witness
of the idea of witness is what the covenant is about. You've seen and experienced me.
Yeah.
Now go represent me
to
the nations.
Right. Mm. But what's interesting is that this is where the word witness starts to be used a lot to describe the Torah.
In the covenant relationship.
Yep. Yeah. That's right. So now it's the law or the Torah that is over and over again called the witness, but it's usually translated as the testimony, like the tablets of the testimony.
Mm. Oh, yes. That's an interesting phrase.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Over and over again, or the ark of the testimony, the ark of the witness. So the tablets, it's this experience that Moses had with Yahweh and the things
He goes up on the cloud 40 days.
Right. He has this experience with like the kingship and the power of Yahweh and the rescue from Egypt. And then God talks with him, he experiences him, and he gives him all of these instructions.
Yeah.
And this is called a witness to who Yahweh is.
The tablets of testimony has a ring to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like it's a Indiana Jones
title. Yeah, that's right. The tablets are the testimony to the covenant relationship. That's what's written on them.
Yeah.
The terms of the covenant.
Oh, well, yeah. And I think it's interesting to ask here, why are these things called a witness?
Yeah.
What about them?
Yeah, that's right. This one always made most intuitive sense to me because it's like signing a legal document, the stones. Mm. There's actually some debate about what exactly was written on the tablets.
Well, enough to fit on two tablets, front and back.
Yeah. But it's some summary, a representation of these covenant agreements.
Yeah.
Similar to if, you know, when you sign a legal document between two parties.
Yeah.
Then the actual text becomes like a witness of the agreement you made. But then they put it in a box of testimony, which is what the ark is sometimes called.
Right.
So the
all of this is bearing witness.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure I don't lose a plot. So you're saying this idea of being a witness, it holds the whole narrative of scripture together in that you see God choose Israel to be a witness to him in order to help other people see who God is. Mm. And then you even see this through Moses, specifically one Israelite get called out. You call it a chief witness?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And this is because the group of people who are supposed to be the witnesses are already worshiping other gods while Moses is up on the mountain.
That's right.
Right.
So,
right. So it takes one guy. Moses has this incredible experience on top of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And he's up there for 40 days.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And then he comes down with, he's actually written out on stone the things that God told him. And so now he's a witness. The stones are a witness.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it's a witness for this group who are supposed to be witnesses for the world.
To the nations.
Yep.
He's a witness to the witnesses.
Exactly.
He's a witness to the witnesses.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Torah being a witness, it's an interesting concept because the law of Moses is this story that's peppered with instruction, right? Yeah. So I think there are a couple ways that this law could be a witness. Mm. One is that it tells a story about who God is. Mm. So it tells the story of an experience with God.
Yeah.
So through it, people can know him, which is kind of the point of a witness.
Yeah.
And then the instruction in the Torah also...
Like the specific thou shalt.
Right,
not and thou shalt.
Right. I think a lot of those testify to the character of God or what he's like, that he's just and, you know, creates this fair society and wants relational harmony between among this community. Mm-hmm. And then Moses even writes a song that is said to be a witness to the people that tells the story. So this is Deuteronomy 31 and 32. This song is called A Witness, and it tells the story of how God has cared for the people. So the witness of the Torah is almost this story that people, they experience God through it, and they also remember what he's done. So it becomes a witness for the people and also a witness against them if they ever stray from God. There's this song.
It's good. Summarize just for myself. So the storyline of the Torah as a story bears witness to God's purpose to bring blessing to the nations through this family. Then the laws of the Torah bear witness to Israel and to anybody who reads them of God's righteous character, of how he wants a people to be organized.
Yep.
And then Moses's song and words bear witness against the people of Israel if they fail to fulfill the covenant.
Yeah.
And that's,
I think, probably a witness for and against the people, because it's a witness for or to the people in that when they hear it, they are experiencing God.
That's true. Because he was the one up on the mountain.
Yeah.
So he's bearing witness to that experience. And I see.
Yeah.
And then if they fail to fulfill the covenant, then his writings bear witness against them.
Right.
That's right. Yeah, there's that odd, in Deuteronomy 31, he writes a song can be a witness.
Yeah.
And then the song that he sings is essentially, I mean, it begins by saying, you guys are corrupt.
Yeah.
You're not going to be faithful to God. Yeah. You're going to destroy yourselves and God's going to let you do it. So it's like kind of like an I told you so.
Yeah.
Before it happens.
Yeah.
Before you go destroy yourself, I'm going to tell you that I told you so as to bear witness against you so that you can remember that I, anyway.
Yeah.
It's interesting logic.
It is. Yeah.
Witness.
It is. So the Torah is a witness about Yahweh. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is that in the New Testament, Jesus says that the Torah bears witness to him.
Yeah, that's right.
So in the Hebrew Bible, we see that it's about this God who's a king and a deliverer.
Mm.
And then Jesus says that this is actually all talking about him.
Yeah, that's
right. Yeah, in John 5, he says, you search the scriptures, and it is they that bear witness about me. The prophets also become these chief witnesses for Israel. So they also see and experience God as king in a similar way to how Moses did on Mount Sinai. The prophets, both the people and the writings, are meant to bear witness or warn Israel about what will happen if they continue to turn away from Yahweh and his Torah. So a great example of this is Isaiah, who sees Yahweh on the throne as the king and the deliverer in Isaiah 6.
It's kind of like his version of Moses' Mount Sinai.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The glory of Yahweh fills the temple in this vision. Yeah. And then Isaiah is meant to bear witness about this experience to the people and also warn them, which warn, a lot of times our Hebrew, our English word warn is the Hebrew word witness.
Yeah.
So the prophets, the prophets witness to the people.
And why do we translate it warn? Because it's witness with a lot at stake.
Yeah. Here's an example from 2 Chronicles 24:19. It says, yet he, Yahweh, sent prophets among them to bring them back to Yahweh. These witnessed or warned them, but they would not pay attention. They witnessed to or warned them.
Yeah, it's interesting that we would change it to warned in this context, but it makes sense. But a warning in English doesn't always mean that you're a witness of something.
Yeah.
You could just be warning something that you had, secondhand knowledge of, or
that's interesting.
Just understand logically, not something you actually were a witness of.
I'm looking at NIV, as they testified. ESV has testified.
Okay.
NAS has to. Do you remember what translation? This is, was it King James?
No, I thought it was ESV. The Second Chronicles 24:19.
Yeah, yeah. At least the ESV I have.
Okay, so testified. They testified to them.
Against them.
Oh, against them.
They testified.
Maybe that's them. Testify against is kind of similar to warning. It's a negative word.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Yep. So the prophets are also these chief witnesses that testify to Israel about who God is and testify about what will happen if they continue to go away from him. And their purpose is to restore Israel to their rightful role.
Yeah.
And you see this especially in Isaiah 40 through 48. So this is where the word witness gets applied to Israel in a really explicit way or a really direct way. So in Isaiah 40 through 48, we see the word witness and also the content of what the people are supposed to be witnessing about or witnessing to. So Isaiah 43, 10 through 12 says, "You are my witnesses, declares Yahweh." So here, that word's plural, so we can assume he's talking to Israel. "You are my witnesses and my servant whom I have chosen." And here's the content
and
of the
servant
witness.
Servant is singular?
Well, I think servant could be collective. So it's singular, but it could be the nation or one. And I think it gets narrowed to one eventually, but it could be either.
Yeah, so ideal is that the whole people as a group are Yahweh's servant that bears witness.
But I think almost in this idea of servant who, you know, Israel as a whole is supposed to be the servant. And that does get narrowed to an individual. That's kind of similar to this idea of a group of witnesses, but there's a chief witness.
Yeah, like who, Moses.
Yep, who's supposed to
or in Isaiah.
Help the people. Yeah.
That's right.
So you are my witnesses so that you may know and believe me and understand that I am he. Before me, there was no God formed and there will be none after me. So it's this witness about who God is. I am Yahweh and there is no savior besides me. So there's a unique God. He's the savior, deliverer. It is I who have declared and saved and proclaimed, and there was no strange God among you. So you are my witnesses, declares Yahweh. So I think that's the clearest. Isaiah 40 through 48 really clarifies Israel's role as a witness about who God is. To the nations.
Yeah. Which then creates problems in those same chapters.
What's the problem?
Isaiah's constantly calling them a deaf and blind servant.
Right, which is kind of a problem if a witness is a person who sees
That's like
God.
A Monty Python sketch. It's like it a
totally
witness comes
is.
In, he can't see
or hear. But this is the witness God has to work with? That's not going to work at all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is why then Isaiah starts talking about a servant who will turn Israel back into the witnesses they're supposed to be, will open the eyes of the blind.
That's right.
Yeah. So
this is the famous servant of Isaiah 49.
Exactly, yeah.
Who's called Israel. God says, you are my servant, Israel.
Israel is the servant.
But then he says, it's exactly what you have highlighted here.
Yep. Yeah. But then, so the servant is called Israel, but then the servant in Isaiah 49 is said to bring back the preserved of Israel.
Yes.
So it's not just Israel, it's a person or a remnant
it's
a chief witness.
It's our chief witness who's bearing witness to the blind witnesses.
Yep. This servant will be a light for the nations and bring salvation to the ends of the earth. That's what Isaiah 49 says. So,
which was the point of the witnesses in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. The story's coming together.
Yep.
It's cool how you could tell the story of the Bible through this one word.
Yeah, it is.
Cool.
Yeah.
that's what Jesus says he's doing when he comes on the scene. He says that he is that servant and witness. Yeah. He says that in a lot of different ways, but one of the ways is that he claims to be the light of the nations when he says, I'm the light of the world in John 8.
He's basically riffing off Isaiah here when he says, I'm the light of the world.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Among many other hyperlinks
that's cool.
to the Hebrew Bible.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so he says, I'm the light of the world. And then when he teaches in the synagogue, he quotes directly from Isaiah 61, 1 and 2, to say that he is the servant. He's this chief witness who is expected. So he says that he was sent to free prisoners and recover sight for the blind. So open the eyes of the blind, which is what Isaiah says the servant needs to do for Israel.
Which he does... Literally.
Yeah, that's right.
But then also figuratively here, this idea of these blind witnesses, their eyes being opened.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, it's interesting dynamic of the Gospels. He comes as the chief witness to the blind witness. Oh, think this is the whole story of the blind man in John has these two layers of meaning because he heals the eyes of the blind man.
Yeah.
And then these religious leaders are all angry about it. And then Jesus starts calling them the blind ones. And it becomes this kind of double meditation on who's really blind.
Right.
What kind of blindness constitutes true blindness?
Yeah, he's probably saying, hey, remember the Israel of Isaiah's day who were blind?
That's right.
It's kind of what you're
you
like.
Are being right now. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so Jesus, he's the ultimate witness, bearing witness about who he is and proclaiming God's kingdom. And he's called a witness over and over, especially in the book of John. So we've talked about that already. And ultimately, it's his witness specifically that he gives this testimony or witness about who he is that gets him killed.
Oh, right. At the trial.
Yep.
At the court trial. Yes.
So in Luke 22, the leaders say to Jesus, if you're the Christ, then tell us. And he pretty much says, oh, you're not going to listen to me anyway. They're the deaf people.
Yeah.
And then he says, they ask him if he's the Son of God. And he says, yes, I am. Then they said, what further need do we have of witness or testimony? We've heard it ourselves from his own mouth. So it's his witness as the chief witness that gets him killed. But what's ironic is that it's this death and resurrection that his companions witness that caused them to become the witnesses that God had always intended to have for himself. So
that's right.
Yeah, that's right. It's this ironic twist.
And then that becomes one of the key titles to describe Jesus' followers in the world.
Yeah,
as the witnesses.
Right.
Oh, and you taught me this. We kind of skipped over it, but Jesus, his death as a witness in Greek, that's, what's the word?
Martus.
Yeah. And that's where we get our term martyr.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
That's right.
Which I had no idea.
Yes.
So martyr.
To be a martyr, I've always thought of a martyr as someone who dies. Well, a martyr is someone who is killed because of their faith or because of the thing they believe in or for the cause that they have. But to think of that specifically about bearing witness to that cause or to that thing.
That's right.
You're dying for that.
Yeah.
You're dying as a witness. It's a cool image.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's powerful. Yeah, you're staking your life on the truthfulness of what you're representing.
Yeah.
Even if...
And that's what Jesus did.
It cost you... Yeah, he's the chief witness.
He's the chief witness.
Yeah. In the Revelation, Jesus calls himself the faithful witness.
Right. The faithful witness, the firstborn of the dead. So maybe those ideas of being a witness and dying are already being connected in that book.
So Jesus' death is his witness, and then... he commissions in the famous Acts scene.
Yep, Acts 1:8. He calls his followers to be witnesses. Yeah, something interesting about the New Testament witnesses is that just like in the Hebrew Bible, the witnesses are just simply those who have seen and experienced the resurrected Jesus, and then they talk about it. So the word witness occurs a lot of times connected to the resurrection in the New Testament. So Peter will stand up or Paul will stand up and say, we've witnessed the risen Jesus, and implied is that now we're talking about it. So
bearing witness.
seeing the resurrection and then talking about it are one event, or experiencing the resurrected Jesus like Paul does. But it's just still that simple act of you just talk about what you've seen, but here it just carries a lot more weight because you could be killed for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. So, I mean, this idea of my concept of being a witness or witnessing is to convince someone in a religious context, to convince someone. But going through the story of the Bible through the lens of witness, you see how it's just, it's so connected to experiencing God and then sharing that experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to that, we have the word testimony, give a testimony. Right. That's another really common thing in Christian culture.
Share a testimony.
Share your testimony.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
In my mind, that's always been detached from witnessing. Mm. I mean, I guess, no, that's not true. It's a part of witnessing. But witnessing really is the convincing, where the testimony is kind of just a nice little a way to kind of get in the door so that you can then give the logical argument, seal the deal. But being a witness is about your testimony.
Right.
It's about you experience something.
Yeah.
And then you represent that, you share that.
Yeah, I feel like it gives a different, again, I didn't grow up in church subculture the way that you did, but what I see in your body language and in your voice is there is like a pressure. And when I'm thinking about powerful experiences that I've had in my life, I don't feel pressure to share. It's just the most normal thing in the world because it's a powerful experience that you had.
Yeah.
You just talk about it. Right. What else do we have to talk about except things that matter to us that we've experienced? And that seems more like the biblical use of the word.
Yeah.
You
it's this natural sharing about, something you've experienced.
Yeah.
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 Natural, but then also, like we've said, it's very weighty. It ties the whole story of the Bible together. It's like God's plan for communicating who he is selecting witnesses to share. So Jesus becomes a chief witness, and then he commissions his disciples to witness. Mm-hmm. It's part of being a follower of Jesus is carrying that on.
Mm. You know, it's interesting. I'm looking down in your notes here then that makes sense of a lot of these other examples where people's actions bear witness to their character.
Right. Yeah.
So Hebrews 11.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
People's faithful trust and obedience.
Yeah. To have a good witness could also just be to be of commendable character.
Yeah.
So it could be talking about something, but just like how an object can be a witness, maybe it can also be just your person, how you represent God by what you do, or is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm going for. Yeah. And there may be some other words to be brought into it. I was just reading, there's the word tested or dokimos or dokimazo, which means trustworthy, or it has been tested and it's trustworthy, which means it's a kind of witness. And it's referring to someone's character. You talk about somebody as having character that is tested,
faithful, tested
and trustworthy.
And, true,
and here people in Hebrews 11, people's behavior, acts of trust in God are a kind of witness.
Yeah, a testimony to their character and even to the God they represent.
Yeah. So it's mostly verbal.
Yeah.
What you bear witness means you talk about it. But the life, your way of life can also be a kind of witness to the truth about God's kingdom. I live this way because I believe in God's kingdom, come in Jesus.
Yep.
My actions then become a kind of witness alongside my word.
It's a great way to frame existence. It's not a way that I typically do, walking around thinking of myself as a witness. I'm just trying to imagine how that might shape me or shape my day, if I if I kind of had that paradigm to be a witness of something, it's an important task. You get called to a courtroom to be a witness.
Yeah.
You're going to be preparing for that. Like,
yes.
In your psyche, you're going to be thinking like, oh yeah, I'm going to go on the stand. I'm going to think about it. Mm-hmm. I just remember one time witnessing a car accident and then leaving my number and then the person called and wanted the story. And it felt like really significant. Like, oh, I'm going to be a witness right now. And I'm, you know, someone's getting in trouble because of what I said. That kind of weightiness of that identity. What would that be if I carried that with me?
Yeah.
You know, the Jehovah's Witness really kind of have something going there with.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's just in it. It's in their name.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Although I think related ideas to what you're saying would be like representing God. Mm. I don't know if you think in those terms or
I'm imaging God.
Yeah. Mm. Or partnering with him. I think those are related ideas in the storyline at least.
Yeah, they are.
I was thinking about this morning. My sons pointed out to me that within the first 10 minutes of my being awake and walking around the house every morning. What I do every day is make coffee. It's the apparently the very first thing that I do.
I'm so with you, yeah.
And so I was just thinking about this for their little observations about me, over these years. My actions bear witness to what I prioritize first thing. In a way, my actions are a witness that coffee is the most important thing to me in the morning. That's I also give them a big hug and kiss every morning, even before making coffee. So I hope that bears witness to something too. But I was just thinking about it. I pointed out, and then I was thinking about what you're saying. My actions are constantly bearing witness about what I value the most, what I believe is ultimately true.
My older son the other day was like, I was putting my socks on standing up near my closet, and he goes,
That's hard.
Yeah, it is hard. And he goes,
especially for you.
And he goes, And he goes, Dad, you usually put your socks on sitting on the bed. And I was like, You notice how I put my socks on?
Wow. That's amazing.
I better step up my game. You're paying attention to me.
Yeah. He's looking at your testimony.
He's examining how I live life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that is. Testimony too.
Yeah, what is that testimony too?
But
he knows. Observed. And he even said, sometimes you sit right there on the bed and sometimes you sit over there on that chair. And it's like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So all this came from, you were kind of going in this direction, that if you thought of your day-to-day habits, patterns of behavior as a form of bearing witness, how would that change how you think about your life and your...
Well, I wasn't even thinking that, but that my character is a witness. I'm just thinking in terms of...
I see.
My role is to witness, not in to stop someone and say, hey, can I try to convince you of something?
Yeah.
But that my identity is kind of wrapped up in that I have something, a perspective, an experience that I want other people to understand. I want to shape how people see the world. I think we think of that in terms of being an ambassador of Christ, I think is a term I think Christians use. But even there, these words can get very flattened out very quick. And just thinking of myself, again, just if you were summoned to be a witness in a courtroom.
You'd take it really.
I would take that really seriously. It would just consume my whole day, my whole week, thinking about, I'm going to be a witness.
Yeah.
And the importance of that. And
I'm
just trying to let that sit for me a little bit.
Yeah. It's weird how simple and how big of a responsibility it is. And also how when you see the whole storyline of scripture, that God wants this group of witnesses who experience him and then talk about it, to imagine being a part of that storyline even today. That's an interesting feeling.
Yes. Well, thank you, Carissa, for putting this all together.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for researching and writing a script.
Yeah, excited for that.
Yeah, me too. This video will come out...
sometime this fall.
Yeah,
sometime. Or early winter.
Yeah.
Fall or winter.
I think winter.
Winter. It's kind of a dual word study gospel, word study witness.
Yep, it'll be a little pair.
And... I'm excited for it.
Yeah.
Me too.
Awesome. High fives all
around. All right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Jisoo and Joanne, and we're from California. And we first heard about the Bible Project because our church uses the videos for our understanding of the Bible.
We believe the Bible is a unified story that leads to Jesus. We're a crowdfunded project by people like me. Find free videos, study notes, podcasts, and more at thebibleproject.com. Thanks.
안녕하세요. 저희는 캘리포니아에서 왔는 지수랑 조엔입니다. 저희들은 성경책이 예수님을 가르치는 책이라고 생각하고요. 더 알고 싶으시면 thebibleproject.com으로 가시면 됩니다.
많이 추천합니다. 고맙습니다.